Welcome to the official SBGAN podcast, hosted by Dr. Alex Nicely.
It's Alex again here, and you're familiar with my voice by now. But you're not. I don't think that many of you have had the pleasure of hearing Dr. Cicel Moltu's voice. That's Cicel Moltu. She is a gastroenterologist, a neonatal gastroenterologist, neonatologist, who works at Oslo's University Hospital. And ever since she started to deal with the newborn, the prematurely born, and to concern herself with how best to facilitate as normal brain development as possible in these desperately ill children, she's had an interest in how to manage their nutrition. She comes from Norway, of course, but she has, to my great pleasure, an American component. She's also studied in Germany, so she's a pan-European. Tell us about studying in England.
Yes, well, yeah, hi, it's nice being here on this podcast. Mm-hmm. Yes, well, in England I just worked 6 months in Hastings, where I did a part of my junior training, which was a nice experience to see how the English health system works compared to the Norwegian and the hierarchy, and that it's a little bit different, and that there are many ways to Rome.
Many roads to Rome, but your road to Rome took you first from Norway.
Yes.
Down to Freiburg. How did you... Freiburg is such a beautiful city. I'm a little bit envious that you had a chance to spend some time there doing medicine, but how did you pick Freiburg and not, Berlin, not Dresden?
Yeah, that was actually because my German teacher, she had a son who went to medical school, and he recommended Freiburg, so that's why I went there, and it's a really nice place.
Isn't it? And then you bounced back to Norway for a year, and then over to England, and then back to Norway, and am I keeping up?
Yes.
Okay, and in Norway, you started to work again as a pediatrician with a particular interest in the neonatal intensive care unit? I'm asking for affirmation here. Did I get it right?
Yes, but yes, I think so.
Okay, but then you also elected to take an advanced degree in nutrition. I may have jumbled. There were so many events in your CV. As I say, you've been everywhere, that I may not have got it right. When did you elect to make an academic pursuit out of nutrition?
Well, that was actually after quite a while. I had been working for about 12 years or 10 years with the nutrition. So I was interested in nutrition both in the neonatal department but also in the gastroenterology department. And I had the honor to start working with the pediatric patients with shortcut syndrome. So you had the neonatal patients with NEC. And that was at the time where we had even cholestasis and the problems with patients dying of that. So in 2006, we started the treatment with Omega Ven in the first patient in Norway. And that's how I got interested into the ways of giving nutrition as a nutritional therapy for critically ill patients. And that was sort of the way that started my interest in nutrition.
And that led eventually, some years back, starting in 2019, to assembly of a committee that would give us the position paper called Nutritional Management of the Critically Ill Neonate, a position paper of the SBGAN Committee on Nutrition, which appeared in JPGN in 2021. You're the lead author on that. Tell us about your contributions to this paper in particular.
Yeah, to that paper, that was a long way to write that paper because it was like my second almost PhD, I felt, when I was doing that paper. Yes, we met in Oslo for a committee on nutrition meeting, and we all felt that there was a need for a paper trying to sort of summarize and look at the evidence for how to treat critically ill preterm infants and newborn neonates after the Pipanic trial and the results of the Pipanic trial, mm-hmm. because it was sort of a vacuum feeling what to do with critically ill term infants and what do we do with the preterm infants, where we already had established that we should promote nutrition, and then suddenly you're supposed to sort of stop nutrition every time the infants are sick. And of course, we do have a lot of sick, very preterm infants. Mm-hmm. So it was a large topic to dive into.
Of course, it was a tough topic to dive into. You don't do anything that isn't tough. I've already noticed that. So you said about that. And in order to give people a scaffolding, a framework, onto which to build, because really there was a gap in what do we do now with this particular child in this particular setting. Of course, everything has to be individualized. But yet there ought to be basic guidelines, and those guidelines were lacking at the time that you set up. Have those guidelines gained acceptance? Have they found utilization among the readership of JPGN, among your professional colleagues?
That is a very difficult question to answer because we haven't really looked into it and made any studies on it either. I think that it's very difficult to change practice. And usually it takes about 10 years from a guideline till it's implemented in clinical practice. Mm-hmm. But I think that people are sort of reading it and trying to be aware that at least you should not overfeed mm-hmm. during critical illness and to take consideration of that. But it is, there's a lot of things happening when a child gets sick when it comes to metabolic changes. So it's really important to be aware of that and try to catch the infant who is really sick and then to change nutritional management according to that.
I'm sure that the best practice principles that you've articulated in this essay, in this article, have been instituted at your home institution.
Well, we try to, but it's difficult. So we still do what we used to do, but we try to reduce the nutrition and try to follow the guidelines, yes.
Okay. What are some of the principal items in the guidelines of which you feel our audience today may not be fully aware? Which are the more controversial items that met with some resistance as you assembled the guidelines, but you finally agreed, really, this is the best way forward?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. It's a wide question. But of course, when we, back in 2019, we were aware that there was a great variation in the nutritional care that these infants were receiving, and also controversies in regard to when and how to start nutritional management when they got sick. And also this understanding what happens with a child who is really sick, because you want to provide enough protein to make the muscles grow and not, well, to avoid protein deficiencies that we know are common after critical illness. And then we thought, well, is this something we should do also with our premature infants? Stop nutritional care when they get critically ill, or should we continue providing protein in these vulnerable infants?
And what was your consensus?
Well, at that moment, there was a lot of different practices around in Europe and in different departments. But of course, for the premature infants, there has been a lot of research that have looked into nutritional management also in the infants that are sick, but they have not discriminated among the really sick infants and the more well infants, because it's very difficult to tell if preterm infants is sick or not. So it's been become common practice to provide nutrition even in a normal basis, just keep providing the same amount of nutrition also in the sick infants. Rather than decreasing it.
Okay. And that's a step forward, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what we thought was a step forward. But with the Pipanic trial that showed that it might be detrimental to provide parenteral nutrition in a critical ill child, even in term infants, and they, where you have to wait a week. So you stop parental nutrition and you wait a week before you go on with the feeding. So that was even down to term infants in the PICU, pediatric intensive care unit. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So then we thought, oh, we might have to change our practice. Everyone was getting concerned. Are we doing the right thing? Should we stop PN in the term infants that are sick? And what about the preterm infants? Should they receive PN, just PN-free nutrition for 2 days or 3 days? What is the evidence? And there was no evidence.
There was no evidence. Has that changed? Is there no evidence supporting one approach or another?
No, there are still little evidence. Actually, there was just one trial that was published now looking into late preterm infants, but there are still little or no evidence on how to provide nutrition in the preterm infants.
Am I wrong to feel a bit disheartened by that?
Yes.
I am wrong to feel disheartened. I should be encouraged. I should be borne up. No?
It's difficult to do these studies, and I think everyone is afraid, and I think it's also you need to really do a good study. You need to be able to answer this question. I think what everyone is afraid of is to do just a large study where you want to push differences and you need a lot of money if you want to do that kind of trial. So at the moment we thought, well, just at least let us get an overview of the evidence that is already there and look at older studies. What did they know like 20, 30 years ago? What kind of basic studies are there? What happens actually during critical illness? And can we draw some conclusions from reports and studies in older children and adults? So that's what we did.
Yeah. Those are part of the recommendations you present at the end of the article.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I suppose proverb after proverb, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink. You can present these guidelines and then you have to hope that people see them as, even without trying them in the field, see them as worth trying in the field. That's for institutions remote from your own. But in Oslo, what part of this immense task of accumulating data on how to best feed the prematurely born and ill infant have you made your task? What does your 50% time spent as a researcher focus on?
Well, my main focus is now on preterm nutrition and not in just the critically ill infants. So what we are looking at is actually the effect of fatty acids on brain maturation and clinical outcomes. But of course, now we also want to try with these trials that we do in preterm infants to see if we can catch the moment when these infants start to get sick and when they recover from illness, because we think that it's very important for nutrition not just to know that you should go slower with the nutrition when the children are sick, but also that you should start and increase the nutritional care as soon as they start to recover, so that you really stop or try to reduce the nutrition that you give, and then you do really sort of start again without a delay, so that you don't. So to try to find a balance from when to stop and when to start. So that is.
Has that led you to a search for biomarkers of these events?
Yes, we're looking at different things now. That is just in the beginning. So it's trying to use biomarkers, not just biomarkers like biomarkers, but biomarkers like volatile organic compounds.
Yeah, those are biomarkers. Those are perfectly good biomarkers. Yes. I won't have you talking about them as non-proper biomarkers.
No. So these are things that we think that we can try to sort of smell when a child gets sick and when they
literally smell, just analysis of exhaled gas. Oh, wow. So tell me more. This is fascinating.
Well, that's just in the beginning of the research. I can't really tell you that much more, but we are trying to do that and couple those biomarkers with the markers or vital parameters like the pulse, and also look at oxygen saturation, heart rate variability, and see if that can help predict these phases of critical illness.
You must feel encouraged by this line of research. You must feel that it continues to be worth following out. And share with us some of the successes that you've experienced along the way.
I didn't understand the question.
We all keep chasing after the absolute right answer to something. We don't necessarily ever get there, but along the way we find little things that are interesting, that are worth sharing with other people, and that really do keep us questing, keep us moving forward. And I was going to ask you, just on an anecdotal basis, for some of your successes along those lines in improving nutrition for these tiny babies.
Yeah, well, actually, when I sort of think back for the research that we have done in the department and what we've managed to see, that it's possible to provide nutrition in preterm infants and actually reach the targets of nutrition by providing sufficient and optimized nutritional care and even enhanced nutritional care. So that led me sort of to this part, but what about the critical illness, when we went and dived into all these old studies, which are quite fascinating, what everyone knew even back in the 90s, and then it's just been put in a drawer and you sort of forget. But all this nice research that you did in the older days, where the studies were smaller, but still you would look at mechanisms of what happens. And so I think that's sort of the small fruits, when you sort of read something and then you discover that, oh, okay, yes, we have to stop, or we have to draw the brake. Now we have to see, is this the best way? And then you get new projects and new ideas. And
that's the wonderful thing about engaging in research, is the sense, I've got something new here. I have some shiny. And you can't wait to share it with other people.
Yeah.
When are we going to see another set of guidelines?
Yeah, I think for that kind of paper, I think you will have to wait another 10 years. Yeah, because the evidence still has to be put down. So I think that, there is still a lot of work to do to answer those questions.
I'm sure that everybody listening today is almost impatient for you to share with us what you have identified in terms of those sniffable biomarkers. What a wonderful thing, the idea of just passing a nozzle across a baby and saying, whoops, we better get on this one. As it sups up a little bit of air and passes it across a chromatography cartridge.
Yeah, that would be great if we could do that.
I have every confidence that very soon you will be. With that in mind, we're at the end of our time quota, which I regret. Have you picked out a song to share with us? Something that reflects what it is to be pan-European and part American and part German and part English and all Norwegian?
Well, actually, for this podcast, I've picked a Norwegian musician, Siri Nilsen, who is the daughter of a really famous Norwegian, not a country artist, but just a folks musician. And she has a very nice vocal, and she sings this song, Alle snakker sant, which means that everyone talks the truth, and it's a very nice song.
If you would like to listen to the song, check out our Spotify playlist, SBGAN's favorite songs.
Thank you so much for sharing that and for sharing your experience with us today.
Well, thank you.